Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Following weeks of what can only be described as horrific torture at the hands of his own mother, 3-year-old Duolania passed away following a fatal injury. Christina Robinson allowed her little boy to suffer in agony after scalding him purposely with hot water, beating him and slapping him. It was a fatal head injury that finally caused his death on the 5th of November 2022. This is the case of the horrific murder of Duolania. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Today's case is one I've followed. I will tell you now, I don't know the length of sentence in this case. I will update that. It will be put in the details on the 24th of May when the actual court determines how long she's going to spend inside the prison that she will be sent to. I hope 150,000 years. But I'm not in charge of these things. And it tends to be in the UK that lenience is far more levied at these individuals than, for example, in the States, where people genuinely do go to prison for over 100 years. At 4:09 p.m. on the 5th of November 2022 in Bracken Court, Ushermore, Durham, a call was made to emergency services after 3-year-old Duolania was found by his mother, Christina Robinson, not breathing in his family home. She told emergency operators that he wasn't breathing. She said his eyes went all weird whilst he was eating. And I will tell you now, when you listen to the phone call, it is pretty blindsiding.
Yeah.
What number?
It's my son. He's only 3.
He's only 3 years old?
He's only 3, yeah.
He's not breathing at all?
He's not breathing. He was eating and then his eyes just went all weird and then...
Okay.
And he just stopped. I've been doing CPR for about 5 minutes.
And he's definitely not breathing normally, definitely not... Chest isn't rising.
Not breathing normally.
Okay.
No.
We've got an emergency ambulance in place for him there. It's our highest priority ambulance that we have, okay?
I'm a mother of 3. I guarantee that if one of my children had stopped breathing, when I was speaking to emergency services, I would be hysterical. I would be finding it very difficult to catch my breath, get my words together, and I would be beside myself because the most important beings in my world were obviously in a scenario where they might not live. So what we would expect from any primary caregiver is a level of panic, a level of hysteria even. And I appreciate that everybody operates differently and it's a subjective experience. But as a mother, I think it is very strange where someone is very calmly describing to the emergency services operator that the child isn't breathing and that she's basically doing CPR. And she says that she's been doing CPR for about 5 minutes before she calls. That's another big red flag. The genuine scenario that usually plays out in these cases is that if your child stops breathing and you have evidence that your child has stopped breathing, the first thing you do is reach for 999, particularly if you're by yourself and you don't have anybody around you. You're going to get them probably on speakerphone so you can continue doing what you're doing whilst you know that they are blue lighting themselves to you to be there for your very seriously ill child. But she hasn't. She's waited 5 minutes conducting CPR and she isn't medically trained and she has not spoken to the emergency services. At this point, the emergency operator starts giving her instructions because clearly they want to make sure that the CPR she's doing is appropriate. And that goes on until, as you would expect, the ambulance arrives outside the home. Now, his mother, Christina, is the only adult in the home at the time. So basically, she's been by herself, there's nobody else present, and she's the person who's found her little boy in this state. So there's nobody else in the environment, which means if something has happened to this little boy, there is only one person who is going to be on the police's radar, and that's her, the mother. Now, emergency services get there very quickly, and when they arrive, they see that this little boy is in a real state. They notice that Duolania's legs were really heavily bandaged, so that indicates there's injury there. Also, he's got food around his mouth and he clearly isn't breathing. They also notice that when they're looking around the home, it's really untidy, it's really dirty. And when you are a responder, you are used to seeing environments and you have an expectation of an environment that a child will be within, and that will be an environment that is safe and clean. This is a place that is falling short enormously of that. And that means that she's not safeguarding her child. If you are living in filthy conditions, I don't care that people will say, well, everybody has a different comfort zone when it comes down to how they live. Crack on. At the end of the day, you can choose to live how you choose to live, but you also therefore have to be expecting and accepting of other people's judgments. And when it comes down to children, they have a right to a clean environment and a safe environment. And when somewhere is dirty and untidy, it is neither safe or clean. It's not appropriate for them sanitation wise. They shouldn't be in that kind of an environment. There was lots of food on the carpets and it was obviously ingrained and trodden in. There was also multiple stains, and I think what they were alluding to is probably some of those stains were from human matter, so things like human feces and urine. Also on the bathroom floor there were several soiled nappies, which is disgraceful. I have a baby myself. You've seen her at the very beginning of this video. She is clean all the time. The minute that she soils her nappy, you change the nappy, and when you change the nappy, you put the nappy in the bin. It's a pretty simple methodology. If you've allowed several to pile up, it's because you're not taking care of your kids.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Also, there was a younger child present in the home, and they knew straight away the child was hungry and thirsty, also stunk of urine. So she hasn't been cleaning these kids. They are living in really inappropriate conditions for a children of their age. Now, medics are desperate to save this little boy, absolutely desperate. And one of the things that chills me to the bone is how calm Christina is. Bear in mind what I've just described. You're in this scene where your little boy is potentially dead. That's what we're talking about in this moment. We're talking about a little 3-year-old boy who is dead. And she is just calmly explaining her version of events to the police. And there is something so devoid of nurture, so devoid of empathy, so devoid of compassion, so devoid of just the most bare minimal ingredients of being a decent human being. She is talking about this situation as if she's not even involved. There's no emotional connection with her words. Christina basically says he was eating a cheese bat when suddenly he became really limp and collapsed. Now, bear in mind, the other child is really hungry and thirsty. The likelihood that this boy was eating a cheese bap when he died, it seems bizarre, because why would the other child be hungry? So I don't buy into this for even a moment. I think this is something that she staged.
Hello, what's your name?
Christina.
Christina, do you want to tell me what happened?
Yes, he was just downstairs, he was eating his food.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, like, there was sort of like spluttering sounds, and then it just sort of like went on him.
Right.
And I didn't know what was going on. I just thought he was messing around because he doesn't chew his food very well.
Right.
So I didn't really notice straight away. And then when I saw that he went a bit limp, that's when I thought, okay, let me rush him upstairs. And then tried CPR, called his dad. His dad's and then he advised me to call off. So I've been working on it only maybe like five, 10 minutes.
So you called dad first and then ambulance.
Yeah.
Right. Wait, and you'd done CPR before you called dad?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I started it straight away.
Okay. How long do you think he was struggling with his food for?
To be honest, I don't even know, like, Maybe like a few seconds, like 10 seconds or something.
And were you with them all of the time?
Yeah, I was with both of them. Right. Yeah, we were both down there eating. And
did you tell ambulance you think it potentially was food or?
Yeah, I did tell them. Yeah.
Okay.
She said that one of the problems with her son was he generally didn't swallow food well. Well, if that's the case, you'd be watching him like a hawk. That's what you do as a parent. You know, even young children, when they're 3 years of age, shouldn't be in a situation where they're left unattended with food, because kids can choke. And also, if they're eating something doughy, like bread and cheese, that can cause an obstruction in the throat. Any parent has made sandwiches for their child. They know there are certain sandwiches that are more problematic for children to swallow. Why would you even give a kid a cheese sandwich if he struggles to swallow food? It is likely to be something that lodges in the throat. It's just one of those substances. When they get together, cheese and bread, they become very doughy. So her choice of giving him that is something that would be questionable, as far as I'm concerned, if he did indeed have these issues with swallowing. She also claims that she started CPR within 10 minutes of his collapse, and that she continued it for between 5 and 10 minutes before making a call to the boy's father, who then advised her to call an ambulance. I kid you not. That's her excuse. That she gives him CPR for 5 to 10 minutes, and then she calls his dad, at which point his father rightfully says, call an ambulance. So we are talking about an abject failure here in the provision of care to this child who would have been in absolute distress if her story is true. And ultimately, who the hell calls the parent of the child as opposed to the emergency services when you're dealing with the potential death of your baby? Now, officers are really confused and concerned about how this is playing out, because they can see that what she is saying is not adding up. And one of the things that they note immediately are those bandages on this little boy's legs. And they say, why? Why is your child covered in bandages? And she says, oh, you know what? He burned himself a few weeks earlier. I mean, it's always the way, isn't it? Burned himself. Put that into context. He's 3 years of age. No kid of 3 years of age is going to burn themselves, because you're going to be watching them like a hawk. They're 3 years of age. They've been on this earth for 36 months. They're not individuals who can be responsible and accountable for themselves. They need the guidance, support and care of the parent around them, because clearly, if they're in a house situation and they're left by themselves, they can come into situations where they injure themselves. And so you as a parent and primary caregiver, make sure that doesn't happen by watching them. How on earth does a child of three managed to get scalding water over them? And that's what we're talking about, scalding water. But she's telling the police, no, it's all his fault. He'd been messing around in the shower. How a kid can get into a shower at three by themselves, turn on the controls, and then subsequently scald them is impossible. I mean, you just need to reenact that. At the end of the day, first of all, baths, if it's a bath shower where you actually have to stand in, it's hard to get in for a child because it's as high as their height. It's as simple as that. But then to actually reach the controls, that's going to be considerably above them, even when they're raising their arm. So there's no way this child will be able to do it. Or let's talk about going into one that has a glass cabinet where you actually open the door and walk in. Again, you still have the issue with reaching the controls. It makes absolutely no sense. The only way that he could have come to this kind of harm is if she's been involved. Now, she said that once he'd scalded himself, apparently by himself altogether, and he's the one who's done it to himself, she said that she didn't take him to hospital because the burns were apparently not causing him any problems and that she was treating them at home. Now, I don't know about you, but I do know about myself as a parent. If my child is burnt and that burn is larger than a coin, I am going to be taking them to emergency services. By the way, if the coin is so deeply burnt that it's caused multiple layers of skin to come away, I'm going to the emergency room, even if it's small, because they are intensely painful. We all know how it feels to be burnt. It is an incredibly painful experience. We're talking with this boy that he has burns significantly over a large portion of his body, and they're not small burns. But apparently, they're not causing him any problems, and she's just getting on with it at home. Now, at this point, Dulania is taken to hospital, and they do carry on trying to resuscitate him, but the truth is he probably died at the house. So the resuscitation attempts were actually discontinued at 22 minutes past five. And at this point, Christina's told that her son has sadly died. When she was told this information, they say that she was quiet and she was upset. But we all know it's very easy to act quiet and upset, isn't it? And certainly I would say that one of the things that I've recognised about Christina is she has the emotional vocabulary of a rock. Not even a very big rock. It's a very small rock, just a little tiny, emotionless rock. Now, the professionals who were engaged in this case are immediately very concerned about Dulania. He's a three-year-old child. He's had no concerning medical history, and he was in the sole care of his mother when he died. Professionals immediately start to question the credibility and honesty of his mother's story about him, as they would, because it makes no sense. You know, she said he's collapsed. He was eating a cheese sandwich. It makes no sense. Apparently he was fine. Fine children don't just suddenly collapse this way. Also, the explanation that she's given for the fact that his legs are covered in bandages is really inadequate. It doesn't make any sense either, because children of three can't do this to themselves. So at this point, the police decide that they're going to arrest her on suspicion of neglect. Again, she doesn't really show any emotion when that happens. And this is obviously in relation to the fact that they found significant burns over his body, and that as a primary caregiver, as a safeguarder of that child, it is your warden duty to make sure that if a child has been badly injured, you get them the right kind of medical help and attention. And she didn't. She didn't take him to hospital to have those burns treated. And the reason for that is she didn't want any healthcare professional to be looking at her child and recognising that she is the perpetrator of these injuries. It's a way of making sure that she avoids the eyes of authority looking into her parenting. And it's such a shame, because obviously if she'd actually gone to the hospital with her son and had those wounds treated, firstly, that would have been far better for him on a pain level. And secondly, it would have meant that an investigation took place, and the likelihood is he would have been protected. They have to do a post-mortem of Dulania's body, which is just harrowing when you think about it. He's 3 years of age, and now he's going to have to get carved up because his primary caregiver didn't care about him. Let's just acknowledge the horror of what we're talking about when we think about an autopsy with a child of this age. And it's necessary, and it's very helpful to any investigation, but it's just so sad that this pure child, this beautiful little boy, is ending up this way. Now, when the results come back, it was horrific. They revealed that the professional scepticism that had been around at the very onset of this investigation was entirely correct, because the post-mortem revealed some absolutely horrific injuries. He had been the victim of very, very serious assaults, protracted assaults over a period of time, and he sustained a number of non-accidental injuries, which is just a fancy way of saying he had purposefully been and willfully been hurt by another party. So Dulania had burns to his body. He also had tram line bruising. So somebody had literally been deliberately hurting this little boy. And he was basically finally killed by a fatal head injury, and that was caused by forceful shaking. So at 3 years of age, obviously a child is still very, very vulnerable to shaking, but the child is in a very different position to how they are in that initial 6 to 12 months. So that demonstrates the level of force that must have been used. We're not talking about a shake. We're talking about a protracted period of very aggressive shaking. At this point, Christina Robinson is actually arrested for his murder, because now they have absolute evidence that his death was non-accidental. And as far as they are concerned, it was intentional. Christina Robinson intended to kill him. Let's look at Christina Robinson for a minute, who she is, what formed her essentially. So she grew up in Tamworth, Staffordshire. She grew up with her mother and three siblings. When she was 16, so this is just before she was due to take her GCSEs, and bear in mind, those GCSEs, she was expected to do well in. She was predicted to get A to C, so to get above C in all of her exams. She has, I would say, a period of transition, because her family relocate to Bulgaria. Her mum basically wanted to be mortgage free, and this led to Christina starting to work as a hairdresser in Bulgaria. She was a mobile hairdresser. Then in 2020, so Christina's 23 at this point, she decides that she wants to come back to the UK. Here, she ends up training to be a personal trainer. She gets a job in a gym. She did that for a couple of years. And it's here that she actually meets her future husband, Gabriel Adu Apau. Now, she meets him on a dating site and they get together. She falls pregnant. This is when she's pregnant with Dulania. And he gets born at Good Hope Hospital in Sutton Coldfield in August 2019. 6 months after their son's birth, Christina and Gabriel actually get married and move to Newcastle. Now, after a period of living in Newcastle, they move to Bracken Court in Ushermore. Ushermore is a old pit village in County Durham in England on the north side of the River Dearness, and it's situated to the west of Durham. Neighbours said they were happy. They appeared a really happy, normal family. They were friendly, but they were quite private. And they did go on to have another younger child. And Dorlenia appeared to be a really well-behaved and quiet boy. In fact, people said he was always impeccably dressed. And he was somebody who seemed to always be smiling, which always breaks my heart in these cases, because Dorlenia is somebody, to all intents and purposes, who should have been given the love, affection and care that he certainly deserved. And he certainly wasn't a child who was problematic. His behaviour wasn't bad. But then when you're living with a horrific, abusive predator, your behaviour doesn't have to be bad, because they'll find excuses to hurt you because it serves their purpose. Sadists like to have objects that they can hurt. And when you see him in pictures, it is clear that the way that he's presented to the world is of this smiling, impeccably dressed child, which is very different to how things are behind closed doors. Now, Christina's husband and Dulania's father, he's away a lot because he's doing basic training in the RAF. He's stationed at the time near Aylesbury. Now, Aylesbury is a long way from where she lives. It's in the county town of Buckinghamshire in southeast England. So he is properly away. Physically, is at a distance to his family. And she decides that she's not really happy with the relationship, and she starts having an affair. She starts having an affair with a 27-year-old man from Middlesbrough. Now, she meets him through a dating app, and he's called Chizun Innocent Onodja. So she basically lies to him. Let's just make it clear. He has no idea that she's still married. She basically tells him that she is still legally married, but it actually hadn't worked out and they'd gone their separate ways. But this introduces us to Christina's deceptive nature. At the end of the day, her husband is on training with the RAF. He is the parent to both of her children. He thinks he's in a relationship still with his wife, and his wife is going around trying to hook up with new guys, basically saying the relationship's over. She just hasn't managed to inform her husband that that's the case. So she's quite happy to pretend the status of her world is very different from the actual status of her world. And like I said, that means she's quite happy to lie. You've got to be a pretty consummate liar to be in a relationship with your husband and be getting away with having an adulterous relationship on this.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And also fails to actually inform the guy that she's hooking up with that she is still married. So she's deceptive on all levels. Now, in a voice note to this new guy, she's describing her son as a troublemaker who deserves a major ass-kicking. And the voice recording of that is basically around the fact that apparently her little boy has taken some pills, which we would all be horrified by if we were a parent and we found this out. But the way that she's framing this is that this 3-year-old gorgeous little boy is some kind of malevolent, natured individual who deserves to be treated in a really negative way because of his sins, so to speak. And I use that word specifically because of what I'm going to move on to shortly.
There's on suspicion of neglect, okay, with your son, with regard to the birds, all right? Don't have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention my question. You seem to late rely on court. Anything you do say may be given as evidence. Okay.
Now, after Christina is arrested, she's 30, by the way, at this point, she just says absolutely lies. I haven't killed him. I haven't been involved in child cruelty. This isn't true. This is just absolutely being made up. Bear in mind, the boy's father, who's horrified at all this playing out, he's cleared of any suspicion. He's been away training. We know that he's had nothing to do with the injuries. He's had nothing to do with the death. He's been cleared completely. But she is trying her best to seem innocent. We get to her trial. So this occurs in 2024 at Newcastle Crown Court, and it is harrowing. And it's so harrowing, actually, that after the verdict is given, those on the jury were told they would never have to be on a jury again. So whenever the information that people have to witness in evidence is traumatic to a certain degree, because of the mental health of those jurors being affected, a judge can say you will never, ever be called for jury duty again. And that happens in this case. So this is how serious it is. So this trial begins and people are absolutely devastated. Now, during the trial, the prosecutor, Richard Wright KC, said that Dulania was subjected to sadistic cruelty by his mother. He said he was subjected to a campaign of violence and cruelty by his mother for petty wrongs. And we see this all the time, guys. When it comes down to serious child abuse cases, those where the child lives, those where the child dies, what we clearly see is an escalation and a graduation in violence towards the child, because the individual perpetrator gets used to the amount of harm they can subject the child to, and they kind of create their boundaries where they can know they can incrementally increase it and the child still doesn't die. Often in cases like this, they go too far, but in other cases where children survive, you see this incremental graduation and they can usually stay within a particular boundary, but they reach the very extreme of those boundaries because it feeds into that sadistic nature. They need to up the ante again and again and again. And in some cases, like the one we're exploring today, that gets so serious that the child finally succumbs to their injuries. And they use any excuse to be violent, any excuse. It can be that the child wets the bed, of course, because a child is traumatized and is living in a house of violence, and that means that they regress and they do things like wet the bed and soil the bed. Now, even though the perpetrator is the person who's created that situation, they will then use that as an excuse to beat the child. Or if a child is hungry and takes some food because they're being starved, that'll be an excuse to beat the child. They will literally go out of their way to make rules, regulations, and situations that the child can never achieve because they can never reach the level they're being expected to reach. You know, a child of three cannot, for example, keep their bedroom tidy. They're too little. But you can set that as a rule for the child so that when they fail, you can beat them. A child of three can't understand why a parent isn't feeding them. So when they reach for a biscuit that they're not allowed to have because they're starving, you're going to be able to beat them because they failed to follow the rules and rituals that you set for them. This is how it works where abusers are concerned. And it gives them a permission base. It validates their violence. And it also gives them leverage to be more violent to that child. That is how cruel these kind of perpetrators are. And also, as they sink in to this sadism, their appetite for it increases and their level of frustration towards the victim increases too, because that's a perfect mirror and parallel for them. It means that they can again become more violent by using these fears and frustrations and feelings that they pretend to have about the child to just beat them further. Now, this prosecutor said that this gorgeous little boy was constantly punished, violently punished, and it was just an everyday experience for him. He said that the little boy was slapped, hit with spoons, beat with a bamboo cane by his own mother. And that cane was actually introduced into evidence with Dulania's blood and body tissue still attached to it, which is harrowing. That was taken from the family home. It's without doubt he was beaten with that. Dulania had over 60 injuries at the time of his death. Also, she used to leave the kids at home alone. So she'd just go off, go on errands, go and get her nails done. Now, guys, you probably won't know how long it takes to have your nails done, but let me tell you, I don't have mine done, with respect, but I did used to have mine done back in the day when I actually cared about my appearance. But it takes a good hour to hour and a half when you have a good nail technician doing your nails, particularly if you're having fake nails like shellac on a base of acrylics. These are things that will take a period of time. And that's not including the traveling to the place that you're getting them done and traveling back. So she isn't leaving her children for 15 minutes. And that would not be acceptable. But she'll be leaving these children potentially for hours. Now, on the phone of hers, there were actually images of Dulania literally distressed. He's got tears rolling down his cheeks. So put that into your mindset. Just imagine the kind of human being we're talking about where Christina is concerned. This is an individual who beats, slaps, attacks this gorgeous child. but also abandons this gorgeous child, goes out, goes on errands, does whatever she needs to do for herself, leaving a child of three and younger home alone. And then when he's distressed, which he would be, because children get distressed, particularly when they're being treated so horribly by tyrants like Christina. And then when he's crying, she responds by videoing him. So we're also talking about somebody who likes to humiliate her son, because that's what she's doing. When you are filming a child in this way, it is a humiliation tactic. She's answering none of his needs. She is exacerbating his pain emotionally and physically, and she's enjoying it. She's enjoying it. They find CCTV footage. This is of Christina when she's actually out, when Duolina's left at home by himself. Now, the fact that Duolina's left at home by himself is terrible and tragic, but it also means that as a mother, she has not even the tiniest inkling as to how inappropriate these kind of actions are, because she defends herself constantly during the court case. Also, as I noted, they bring the cane that's used to discipline Duolina into the court. And what the prosecution say is she's always been violent, but the violence really escalated in the weeks before his death. So they said that 18 days before his death, he was literally forced into scalding hot water. Scalding hot water, guys. And that scalding hot water, which was literally so hot, it caused severe burns on his body. As much as 20% of Duolania's body was literally covered in burns. The extensive burns, which are the legs, the buttocks and the genitals. Can we just conceive the agony this poor child must have been in? The intolerable pain that child must have suffered must have been excruciating. And it must have been excruciating for weeks. Weeks. The prosecutor said that the violence was ramped up until he could stand it no more and he died. We're talking about a three-year-old little boy. A three-year-old little boy who was burnt beyond belief and had to cope with that intolerable pain for weeks before succumbing to even more brutal injuries at the hands of his mother. The court heard that there was absolutely no evidence that Duolania choked on his food, but there was absolute categorical evidence that the boy had sustained a major head injury that caused his death. And they said this was deliberately inflicted and it had been caused by the use of significant force. In fact, there was evidence of recent bleeding inside the skull. There was also damage to both his brain and his eyes. That obviously suggests that the injury was caused by excessive and forceful movement of the head, such as forceful shaking. In this case, very forceful shaking. They also found deep bruise marks on his elbows. Now, just think about that. If you've got deep bruise marks on your elbows, the suggestion is there that you've been really very violently grabbed. Also, there was evidence of another head injury that had occurred 2 days earlier. And that injury, again, had come to fruition through very significant force. And they said that the level of force that had been used and the extent of the injuries for that actual head injury to have been fatal was so serious that she intended to cause the boy really serious injury. Now, I know a lot of us will acknowledge that the fact that Christina has been violent to this child for a period of time and it's been protracted in nature as far as the abuse and torture is concerned, that to some degree, she may not have absolutely intentionally intended to kill him that day. We can all say she probably thought she'd get away with hurting him more. But the point is, her actions, without doubt, had the potential to seriously injure or kill him. So while she may not have premeditated the idea of, I'm going to kill my son, the intent is there because she has reached a level where the violence is so dangerous that he has been significantly harmed, he has been significantly injured, and she has not restrained herself. She has continued to abuse him after the burns, after the head injury, and so on and so forth, until the final head injury occurs. So like I said, while she's not premeditated and planned potentially this murder, she absolutely, within her actions, shows a willing intent to cause him serious harm or kill him just by her actions. Now, in response to the accusations that she had deliberately scalded the boys, Christina's like, no, I didn't. I didn't actually burn my boy. No, they'd all been accidental. And this is the absolute pile of BS that she discussed. She said, on the 19th of October, I'm rinsing him with the shower head. after he'd basically soiled himself. So note how she brings in, I'm a caring mother. He'd soiled himself. He's the problem child. He's the one who's defecated on himself. I'm merely the caring, nurturing parent who's being compassionate and choosing to shower him down so that he's clean. So she's introducing this idea of her being a good, caring, nurturing primary caregiver. It's a lie, but that's the picture she's painting. And he's the problem. He's the one who's soiled himself. She's setting him up as the antagonist in this situation. She says that as she's doing this, the water gets hotter than she's expecting. Now, let's all remember, if you are showering a child, you are the person who is using the soap to remove the excrement in this case. We've all been there if we've got children. Some of us will have been there with elderly parents and so on and so forth. At the end of the day, you use soap to get rid of the excrement on the body. Your hands are in that water. You're holding the shower head. You're using the actual soap and water to remove whatever it is you're removing. You are going to know immediately if that water is too hot to bear, because your skin is going to be affected in the same way. Bear in mind, at 3 years of age, the child is going to be able to sit in the bath at the same temperature as you. You're going to be able to experience water in the same way as then heat. We're not talking about a very early child here, days old, who you've got to be a little bit careful with regarding temperature of water. We're talking about a child who's had 3 years of being here. So if it's scalding you, it's scalding him. If it's not scalding you, it's not scalding him. And it's scalding him. So she would know. And she said, no, even though this water is so serious, guys, that he had terrible burns, 20% of his body, in really sensitive areas. She's making out that she had no idea. It took 3 days, apparently, for her to realise the severity of her son's scalding injuries, which is an absolute pile of crap. There is no way on God's earth, when you have burnt your child this way, they are not crying, screaming even. Anybody who's had a burn on a serious amount of their body knows it is absolute agony, let alone a three-year-old little boy. And she said that I didn't get medical help for the burns because she was a bit ashamed because it would look bad for her. Now, if we're ever going to be introduced to the kind of character Christina is, that is perfect. That statement perfectly addresses the kind of human being that she is, the kind of narcissist that she is, because she is saying, oh, well, I could have got medical attention for the burns, but you know what? I didn't want people to look at me and think I was a bad parent. She's not concerned about him. He's irrelevant. He can deal with the pain. He can deal with the agony, potentially the infection that could lead to a life-threatening issue, because that's what happens when burns are left untreated. They get infected. She was willing to do that to make sure that she didn't look bad. So immediately she abandons once again who she is meant to be as a parent. She didn't want people to look at her and think that she'd done something wrong. So she was willing to risk him, even risking his life. She told the jurors, unfortunately, I put my feelings first. Hey, kid, I don't think any of us need a description of that. We all know that you only put your feelings first. We know you don't care about your kid. All you've done is put your feelings first. And sadly, your feelings are sadistic and parentally abandoning. That's the human being that you actually are. I don't think the jury needed any more of a description than to see that cane and to see those bandages and to see those injuries on the little boy and to hear what the pathologist said to understand that this woman only ever puts her feelings first. That's why she cheats on her husband. That's why she doesn't go to hospital. That's why her little boy dies, because she don't care about anybody apart from herself. She said, and this is both ludicrous and laughable if it weren't in the context that we're discussing a child dying. She said she went into care mode. Care mode. Sorry, Christina. I think you'll find you don't have care mode. If we're looking on the different modes on your body, you have useless mode, sadist mode, adulterer mode, and I'm a massive liar mode. Apparently that one's on pretty much 100% of the time. She doesn't have a care mode. She's never had a care mode. There is nothing caring about this woman. And the reason that she said she went into care mode is because she Googled searches. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I don't know about you. You know, if I'm walking down the road and there's a major car accident and I see somebody, I don't know, fly through a window screen, hit the pavement, and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, oh, I need to go into care mode here. I'm just going to Google, what do I do in the event of a serious road traffic accident? Well, there's that call the emergency services. Yes, I'm just going to ignore that. Oh, let's look at this. Apply honey to the wounds. not sure that's the most appropriate action, but I'll give it a go. Google says it. I mean, genuinely. The only care mode a parent has when your child's been burnt is ring 999 and get the people who know how to deal with this situation to deal with it. But no, apparently she's got into care mode and she's going to be able to do this. And she searches these things that are all relating to minor burns, by the way, minor. These aren't minor. He's got major burns. And so the way that she manages it to order some bandages, some dressings, some salves and some creams. And this is all because she wants to disguise what's really happened. And even when she gets those, it is clear the Delania is still in absolute agony. I cannot even begin to conceive of the agony that child would have endured. I mean, anybody who's had an open wound or a burn will know that when people put ointments on it, unless you are a trained professional, and you usually will have, where children are concerned, some sprays that can anaesthetize the feeling so it's not as painful for that child. They even put in situations where children will literally put under when they have their bandages removed in burns, because it's so traumatic and so troubling and so painful, because it is excruciating. And yet she's just doing this herself. And one can only begin to imagine how Delania would have felt when she was coming over to him and he knew that she was going to put things like ointments on him. He must have been terrified. And neighbours actually said they could hear a child whimpering most nights. Now, again, I don't want to come down in mass judgment of people, because I appreciate people have busy lives and people think the best of other people and so on and so forth. Now, if I heard a child whimpering most nights, I'm going to say I'd be on the phone to social services. I would want to let them know that I thought there was a child in distress. And even if I risked offending my neighbours, where children's lives, where children's safeguarding, where children's potential harm is occurring, it is definitely worth offending people. And it really concerns me that people often do this reflective exercise of saying, oh, well, after the event and I found out that a child had died, I remember that I heard this child clearly whimpering or crying or screaming. Do better, guys. That's my advice. Do better as a society. All of us, we need that information. Let's offend people, because Delania might be alive if people had bothered to actually call the police and say, I think there's a child who is at risk and might be injured. But anyway, this didn't happen. And even Christina's lover, who she was obviously having this relationship with, he said that he physically saw Delania in obvious discomfort. Apparently he was grimacing in pain. He was struggling to move. And I appreciate that this guy clearly testified and said that what she had done was wrong and is not on the side of Delania's mother. I appreciate that he sees her as a perpetrator in this case, but come on. If you see a little three-year-old boy, he's grimacing with pain and struggling to move, you don't care what the mother's telling you, you get some help for him. He said that the wounds were bleeding. He said that he was unable to walk up the stairs, that he needed to be carried. Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you call 999? I don't care who you're sleeping with. I don't care who you're having a bit of fun with beneath the sheets. Be a man. Actually pick up the phone and do what's right for the child. I know he's not responsible for this little boy's death, but I think he's complicit in failing to meet the needs of a seriously injured kid. And of course, the way he speaks to this is that he was told by Christina that the wounds were caused by Delania when he played with the shower in the bath and that he scalded himself with the hot water. She said that she'd taken him to hospital after she'd bandaged him and that they'd said there was nothing serious and that he'd been checked over by a doctor. But hey, a predator's going to say that stuff to you. It seems to me like this guy had an intuition that there was something seriously amiss and something seriously wrong. Why believe this woman? You don't really know her. Clearly you didn't know her at all. She was married to somebody else. But the truth is, you don't have to follow her orders. You can happily go over her head and actually speak to the police or get an ambulance for the child if he's in so much pain. Anybody can see with their own eyes, can't they, and hear with their own ears when a child is distressed. It's really annoying when time and time again we have these individuals who could have made a difference and they didn't, because that's a choice. You chose not to do it. You chose to abandon the child instead by believing this woman who clearly is a horrible human being. And health experts actually said in court that Delania, had he been taken to hospital, would have needed general anaesthetic every single day just for the changing of his bandages. That is how serious his injuries were. He'd have needed general anaesthetic just to manage the pain, and she's at home doing some care. And this guy she's with is letting this boy writhe in agony and not be able to walk and doing nothing about it. The prosecution said that the burns were textbook injuries of a child who'd been deliberately immersed in boiling water. So they knew this isn't an injury because he's turned the shower on. This is a bath that's been run and a child that has been forcibly placed in that scalding water. They said the pattern and distribution of the burns revealed that they, without doubt, had been caused by Delania sitting in scalding hot water. Also, there's a lack of splash marks. So you'd expect to see splash marks if a shower had been used. And he said this is absolutely deliberate that Christina had done it for punishment because he had soiled himself like children do, particularly traumatised children who were being brought up by a monster. And Christina is a monster. Christina, of course, said it's not true, that it was a toilet training accident and therefore it didn't warrant punishment. But as we know, Christine is a liar. She's not a consummate liar. She's a terrible liar, but she's a liar nonetheless. She did admit in court that she happily left her children home alone. She said it was something that she'd done very commonly. Now, this is interesting because this is what people do when they are major liars and they've been found out for something really serious. They will acknowledge a failing. That's very serious. And they'll acknowledge that failing that's very serious to try to make themselves seem like actually they're quite honest. So why would I admit what I'm about to admit if I had actually gone ahead and killed my child? Because this could essentially make me fall under your scrutiny more because I'm going to say, yes, I did leave my kids home alone and I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, which is very incriminating, right? It would suggest that you are deeply neglectful of your child. And yet, she says that. She says, I'll be honest with you. I thought they were safe. I left them in a position and knew they'd be there when I came back. Honestly, at the time, I thought they would be okay. Obviously, now I wouldn't do that. So you see what she does there. It's very manipulative. And if you aren't really looking at that with the scrutiny that I'm looking at, it's something that can be easily missed. But she is trying to suggest, oh, I was just somebody who didn't understand that leaving my little kids who were under three at home by themselves was a problem. I just thought, hey, it's what you just do when you're a single parent or you're a parent with a partner who's away. You just leave your kids at home. I mean, what harm could come to them? Well, it would seem a lot, Christina, because one of your children ended up dead and the other one was starving. But what she's trying to do there is make herself feel like the jury are going to listen to her and be like, oh, she's really honest about her failings in this situation. So maybe she didn't purposefully and willfully kill her child, because at the end of the day, why would she admit what a terrible parent she is here, neglecting and abandoning her children and putting them at risk by leaving the home and leaving them home alone? Why wouldn't she then also say, oh, I didn't realise it was terrible to beat my child? So that's why she's doing this. And it's highly manipulative. It's very rudimentary and it's easy to see through, but it's manipulative. She also admits that, shall we say, some of her punishments are not punishments that people would look in and think were acceptable. So again, she's trying to talk about the fact that maybe some of her punishments that she's accepting are not accepted by other people, but she feels that she's got reasons to do it. She says, yes, I did beat the boy with a garden bamboo cane for playing with his food. Sorry? Like, sorry? She literally says that in court. Yeah, I did. I beat my child with a garden bamboo cane. And I know that a lot of you will know what they are. For those of you who don't know, they're these thin and sometimes thicker bamboo canes. They're quite sturdy. They're hard to break, believe me. And they are going to do an inordinate amount of damage to anybody. If you get whipped with a bamboo cane, you are going to be in agony as an adult. And we're talking about a three-year-old kid. And we're talking about multiple strikes. So this is a woman who was happy to carry out this level of corporal domestic violence. It's appalling. And this is for playing with his food. That would be a rational way of treating a child. He's playing with his food, so you beat him with a bamboo cane. And apparently, this was an hour before he collapsed at their home on the 5th of November 2022. She said that she struck him across the chest with the cane. And the reason for this, and you're going to love this, guys, you're going to love this, because you know what? When in doubt, bring in the big G-O-D, right? It's not because she's a terrible mother. It's not because she's a monster of a parent. No. It's that she's a dutiful individual following the teachings of the Bible. I kid you not. So Christina was a follower of the Black Hebrew Israelites movement. So this religion followed teachings of the Old and New Testament and the Apocrypha. Now, I know a lot of you won't know what the Apocrypha is. So the Apocrypha, it's often referred to as like a single entity, but it actually is a diverse set of books that's been written over a long period of time. Now, the books were written roughly between 400 and 200 BCE. And because some people think they've been written relatively recently, some scholars don't believe that they are Holy Scripture at all. Now, the term Apocrypha actually means stored away or hidden. So basically, make of that what you will. It's something that's hidden, and it's used to refer to books that were kept out of public reading in church liturgies. So obviously, not all sectors of the church are happy. There seems to be some real conflict between Protestants who reject it in Christianity and Catholics who accept it in Christianity. But like I said, it's a very big issue and discussion within the church. It wasn't based on any conspiracies or anything. It's not like the books were forbidden. They're still read by Christians, but it's actually disputed whether they're actually considered divinely inspired and authoritative. But nonetheless, she apparently decides that they are. She says that she's really excited and eager to follow the religion of her bloodline, and she describes it as more of a lifestyle than a religion. Well, I think you'll find that a true religion is also a lifestyle, Christina, because you follow the word of God and you attest to a scripture that you relate to. But if we're talking about lifestyle being, I can act however the hell I want and abuse my children, then bring God into the equation as an excuse. Sure, that seems to be the lifestyle that she's decided to adopt. It's a Christina lifestyle. It's not actually a religious lifestyle. She said that she had watched a YouTube video that quoted scripture promoting the rod to correct a child. And I don't know about you, if I'm having a bad day, I'm having a bit of a bad day. Do you know what you need? No. What do I need? You need to think about taking some information and advice from YouTube videos. Are you sure? Yeah? Yeah? Honestly, can't go wrong. Are you sure? Absolutely. There's never ever been on YouTube a video that has suggested things that are not 100% factual. Really? I'm not sure that that's entirely correct. Absolutely. Look at Andrew Tate. Everything he says is true. Everything. At the end of the day. You should probably follow him. I'm not sure that what you're saying is true. Seriously. Seriously. And there's some wild left theories and wild right theories as well that are all factually based. Aren't they completely contradictory? Wouldn't that be the absolute opposite of each other? No. All you need to do, if you need some advice, is go on a YouTube video and it will 100% guide you in the correct direction. Okay. I'm pretty sure that some really dark stuff. No, just do it. That's what I'm saying. Well, apparently she obviously felt that that was appropriate, and that's what she did. She went on YouTube. It said, you know, use the rod to correct a child. And she's like, I've got a bamboo stick in the back of the yard. Why don't I go and use that? I find this woman so bizarre because her arrogance is overflowing. It's as simple as that. So Christina said that basically she's this complete beginner and she believed she was right at the time when she was beating her child with a rod. But now she realised that she'd been misguided by, you know, YouTube. It's not my fault. It's YouTube's fault. I think it's your fault because you were looking it up on YouTube. No, it's YouTube's fault. Because if YouTube hadn't had this video where clearly YouTube is telling me to hit my child with a rod, I wouldn't have hit my child with a rod. I think it's more that you were searching for videos that seem to be pretty amplified in the abuse section where children are concerned, and that you found a place where you could create a permission base for your horrific abuse. That makes sense. But I'm just going to say, I'm just obedient to the big GOD. Honestly, is it possible in circumstances like this that the court can decide that they want to use a rod just to, I don't know, culturally or religiously accept the position that individual is peddling and say, well, you know what, we'll just try it on you and see whether you feel as obedient to God as you're being hit repeatedly by this bamboo cane. Anyway, she said she'd only basically hit him with a cane on that one occasion, even though he had horrific injuries, and she couldn't recall how many times she had struck him or how he'd actually reacted during that occasion that she had admitted to using it. Now, Dulania had at least 19 tramline wounds, so that is basically the evidence that he was hit by that bamboo cane. Isn't that horrendous? How could anybody strike a child with a bamboo cane 19 times, let alone a child who's already gravely injured by horrific burns? Can you even begin to conceptualise the agony that little boy would have been in? Just think about it for a minute. Those wounds on his legs, his genitals, his buttocks, and she's hitting him repeatedly with that rod. Indescribable torture. However, one of the things that she completely denied was that she ever shook her son. She said that she didn't inflict the fatal brain injury on him by shaking him. She said that she didn't shake her son because she physically couldn't have shaken him, as she had, I kid you not, low iron at the time. And apparently this low iron caused her to have reduced energy and strength. Obviously not a reduced energy and strength to not go and have your nails done. No, apparently she had all the strength in the world for abandoning the kids, leaving them at home and going and getting a nice acrylics on. But you know, when it came down to shaking a three-year-old, oh, that was far too much for her. And the reason I know this is an absolute pile of rubbish is, one thing you might not know about me is I suffer from a ferritin resistant condition, which means that I can't absorb iron in my diet. Neither can my sister's family, neither can my own children. We have a genetic issue and it's treated occasionally through blood transfusions if I have very low hemoglobin. But usually if we keep my iron stores up, then it doesn't get too bad. It has done in the past, but not too often. And so I have these iron infusions. Going to hospital, only takes half an hour really these days. Used to take about 5 hours, but they've changed it to about half an hour. And I am good to go for 6 to 12 months at that point. Let me tell you, I have been in a situation where my hemoglobin was unbelievably low to the point where I had to have blood transfusions and my iron stores were not present. I was literally not present with iron. And therefore, I know that at that time, I was still running 6 miles a day. Now, I was knackered, but believe me, did I have the strength to shake a child of 3 years of age? Absolutely, 100% I did. It's knackering, it's exhausting, it's annoying, but I tell you what, it doesn't mean that you can't pick up a three-year-old child and you can't shake that child. She did, as I said, admit to striking him with the cane, and she said that apparently that didn't take much energy, even though she did it 19 times. Not that energy, it's the other energy. I have the energy for striking a child repeatedly 19 times, so that I literally left marks all over his body. That's a different kind of energy from the shaking a child energy. I don't have the shake a child energy, I have the strike a child energy. They're totally different energies. Can you see how she just wraps herself up in these lies? It's unbelievable. She ends up saying that on the 5th of November 2022, this is actually what played out. She said Dulania was eating a cheese bap and apparently some leftovers, and suddenly he goes limp and he makes this gargling and gasping sound. She said she ran to him, called his name, ran upstairs with him. She then went and cleared his airways. And then after he's collapsed and stopped breathing, she waited 20 minutes, 20 minutes before she dialed 999. Apparently she first spoke to her husband on the phone. Then she, I kid you not, Googled how to resuscitate a child. Now this is why we know this woman is a monster. No one does that. No one innocent ever looks on Google before ringing emergency services. Nobody. Nobody waits 20 minutes to call emergency services unless you know you've done something terribly wrong. Christina said that she didn't think to call 911. Oh, you know what? I just didn't think. I didn't think about calling the emergency service who would have come and helped my son. I didn't think about it. I thought about lots of other things. I thought about Googling what to do if you need to resuscitate somebody. And probably, you're right, in those Google searches, it would say call 999. But I didn't think about it. I just thought about home care. I'd done it with the bandages. I thought, why not try my hand at resuscitation? It's unreal that she says these things. And it goes down that same line of, I didn't know it wasn't okay to go out shopping or have my nails done and leave children who clearly could not look after themselves completely by themselves. I didn't think that was a problem. And now it's a, I just didn't know that I had to ring emergency services. This is a woman who has no morals at all. She's either the worst parent ever with one brain cell who shouldn't be allowed even within 100 feet of a goldfish, and she isn't. She's quite eloquent. She's very manipulative. She's very good at lying to the emergency services initially. She doesn't have a problem with any of that. So the idea that this is somebody who just didn't know is absolute lies. But yeah, apparently she didn't think they were calling 999. She said she was panicking and it was a heated situation. Well, she isn't panicking and she doesn't look heated in any way when those first responders arrive. You've seen the video of that. She is completely in control. She said she was too focused on performing CPR on Dulania. So apparently it was because she was just being a really good mum that she didn't call emergency services. She was just too focused on saving her son to actually get the people who could save her son. She said that while she was doing this, maybe she hit his head on the banister as she rushed upstairs to perform CPR, or just casually smashed his head into a banister. Come on. Absolute lies. She also said that she didn't agree with the evidence from the police, that she appeared to lack urgency, but anybody watching her when the police turn up can see she lacks urgency. And the explanation that she gives for his death is that basically her son had complications at birth. It's 3 years past birth. Yeah, but he has some complications at birth. That took 3 years to kill him? No, just go with me on this. I'm trying to think of an excuse and it won't make any sense, but I'm just going to do it anyway. So she basically said that he got stuck on the way out and she said that she needed assistance to get him out because of this. And allegedly he was starved of oxygen for a while. She said that his eye was bulged and bloodshot. She said, I'm not saying that this could have led to what happened, but because no one checked, we don't know if there was any damage. I mean, sorry, what? You're saying your child was starved of oxygen at birth, but nobody did any checks. Again, massive red flag, huge liar. Because we know that if a child is starved of oxygen at birth, it can lead to serious complications with the brain. In fact, people who've suffered from cerebral palsy, often that can be to do with the fact that an individual has been starved of oxygen at birth. When you hear about massive cases where a child has been badly injured because hospitals have failed to go and do the right things by children during the birth and they get starved of oxygen, you hear about major payouts to protect that child for the rest of their lives because they're going to need massive care. But apparently, where Christina's concerned, you know, they didn't do any of these checks. So firstly, no, we can't say his death had anything to do with it, because secondly, you're making it up, kid. Anyway, she said that from the moment that he was born, it was clear he had issues. He was bumping into things, he'd bang his head. He had appointments with eye specialists. Well, a lot of kids have appointments with eye specialists. My own son had appointments with eye specialists. He had a squint. It doesn't mean that he's an individual who's going to end up looking like he's been in a serious road traffic accident, which apparently I've had nothing to do with. Now, she said that she would see his motor function be a problem. So he'd trip over blankets. He actually, a few days before his death, apparently slapped his head really hard. He banged his face into a wall really hard. She also said that on the 5th of November, he face planted into the living room and he fell off the toilet face first. Now, let's just think about that. So this is a child that apparently has been just randomly ricocheting off walls. That's what she's saying. She's saying that he's walking around, he's tripping over, he's smashing his head into doors and walls and floors. And he even, when he's sat in the toilet, falls off and hits his face on the floor. That in itself would say your child's in distress. No child is doing that because they are able to function normally. If your child is constantly banging into things and falling over and hitting themselves seriously, we have got something really problematic occurring. You need to get straight to hospital because your child is obviously in a situation where they're either passing out or there's some neurological disorder, but you're going to have to get that treated. But no, she says he was just a clumsy child. So he'd bump into the wall and bump into the table, that sort of thing. No, Christina, it's not that sort of thing. He had a major brain bleed because of a fatal injury that you inflicted on him. It's got nothing to do with banging into a table. It seemed that Christina was basically, throughout the trial, just trying to come up with any explanation for his death that didn't involve her being the culprit. She's just grasping at straws and it's very obvious. Now, during the trial, the prosecutor actually said that Christina had failed her son completely, and I think we all agree with that. She replied, "I did my best for my son, because I did not intentionally do anything to him. I did my best for my son because I did not intentionally do anything to him. I did not intentionally kill him, so I kind of did what was best for him." you didn't do what was best for me. No, I did. I did. I didn't intentionally harm him. I mean, I harmed him, but it wasn't intentional harm. It was just, you know, the occasional beating with a rod. Literally, shut up. Anyway, this is what she's saying. The prosecutor, I would say in this case, came down very hard on Christina. They said that she killed Delania after the injuries that she'd inflicted on him made him an inconvenience or irritant. She, of course, denied the claim. She said, my son isn't an inconvenience to me. She said that she wouldn't intend to kill him. She said that she wanted children, that she loved her family. She said that she'd been through multiple losses, had miscarriages in the past, and therefore there is no way that she would kill her child. She said that she wanted a large family with children in the double figures, but that her husband had decided he didn't want any more children. So she's basically saying that because she's got this idea of double figures with her husband and she was going to have lots of children, she couldn't possibly be a killer. She couldn't possibly be a perpetrator. I mean, that's absolute rubbish. Just have to think about Mick Philpott, the very first case I ever covered on this channel. He had lots of kids and was quite happy for them to all burn to death. You can have a lot of children and really not care about them. In fact, we see this time and time and time again. Her husband obviously doesn't want more kids. I understand that, probably because he realised he'd made a massive mistake marrying her. And Christina, because she wasn't happy with the fact that her husband had said that he didn't want any more children, she had actually managed to get pregnant through a sperm donor after she said the marriage had broken down and she was keeping this secret from her husband. So she's now pregnant with a sperm donor and she's lying to her husband, although she's suggesting the marriage was in trouble and it had broken down. But if that's the case, why is she keeping it secret from him? I mean, if you're not in a relationship with your husband anymore and you're pregnant with a sperm donor's child, no big deal. You can let your ex know. It's got nothing to do with him. You're just moving on in your own life. But again, she's just lying, isn't it? Her husband just didn't know anything about this. Now, when she became pregnant with that sperm donor, she's going and seeing healthcare professionals. Yet, as the court here, she didn't get any treatment for her son's injury. She's getting treatment for herself, but not him. So this isn't that she is somebody who's a naturalist, who's dealing with the injuries with her son by herself, because she doesn't go see healthcare providers. You know, she's quite happy to get help from healthcare providers, as long as it's for her. She just doesn't want him to be helped. Christina made what I would consider a very unusual move in this case, because she sacks her legal team. Literally, during a trial, she sacks the legal team and decides, I know who the best person is to represent me in this very serious case. I'm going to sack all of you. Why are you sacking us? Because you're all qualified. Yes, we are qualified, and we should seriously suggest that you shouldn't sack us because we're defending you. Yeah, I know. Not well enough. Well, I mean, to be fair, Christina, it's not a very easy case to defend, is it, you great big massive monster? But, you know, at the end of the day, we do know the law. I'm sacking you. I've got somebody better. Really? I'm really surprised at such short notice. It's me. It's myself. I'm representing myself. Yep, she decides that she's going to represent herself. And in her clothing speech, she says, I did not murder my child. I did not kill my child. I did not forcibly immerse him or submerge him in hot water. And I ask for you to not find me guilty for something I did not do. Please, do not find me guilty for something I have not done. I mean, I will tell you, that sounds a little bit like begging as opposed to defending. But hey, crack on, Christina. In for a penny, in for a pound. Why not have a go at this old legal defence lark yourself? Now, in the prosecution's closing speech, it was very, very strong. They said this was the culmination of a campaign of quite deliberate cruelty and violence meted out as punishment. Violence and cruelty to punish a 3-year-old child to correct his disobedience. They said that Delania went on to suffer a final savage attack when he was assaulted so severely his brain stem was disrupted and he stopped breathing and he died. They said, we suggest the evidence in this case, hard facts, drives you to the sure conclusion she's guilty of all these offences. I do think the prosecution were incredibly strong in this case, and I do genuinely believe that the defence were probably pretty relieved when they were sacked from it, because it's not a loss for them, is it? It's a loss for Christina. But it's not a loss for them. They were basically fired from the job. And I would imagine that as they were removing themselves from having to be around this woman, it was a relief for them. Because you meet this kind of individual rarely, even when you are a defence barrister. These people are the worst of the worst. The Christinas of the world are the worst type of human beings that any of us can ever have the misfortune to meet. The trial lasted 17 days. There was then a day and a half of deliberations, after which the jury came back and found Christina guilty of murder and of 4 child cruelty charges. They decided that Christina absolutely did cause a fatal brain injury to her son on the 5th of November 2022 when she was the only adult in the house. She was banged to rights. It was only her present when that injury happened. She was also found guilty, as I said, of the 4 child cruelty charges, which is said to have taken place in the weeks leading up to Delaney's death. And even though when that verdict was read out, she was completely emotionless. Like I said, she has the emotional bandwidth of a very small rock. There were tears in that room, and the tears came from the jury members. Those jury members cried for that little boy, but she had no tears whatsoever. The judge actually told Christina that she will be given a life imprisonment sentence, as that is the mandatory sentence for murder. The judge was also very concerned because obviously she's sacked her legal team, so she doesn't have legal representation. So he decided not to sentence her on the day of the verdict. The judge asked her if she would seek legal assistance ahead of sentencing because she had obviously sacked hers, and she replied, "I will consider it." The judge actually said to her, "I advise you in the strongest possible terms to consider it very carefully. I think you need the assistance of competent counsel to deal with the sentencing." So Christina Robinson will be officially sentenced on the 24th of May, giving time, of course, for her to seek legal representation before her sentencing. Now, following the trial, Detective Chief Inspector Simon Turner of Durham Police, he spoke outside court and he said that the abuse inflicted on Duanalea had been horrific. He said that he was left in significant pain at the hands of his mother. He said that she lied from the offset, and he said he was pleased that the jury had seen through her lies. He said, "My thoughts are with those who truly cared about Duanalea. Sadly, nothing can bring him back, but hopefully today's verdict will provide some closure and allow them to grieve." The local authority, who obviously are going to consider whether there were missed opportunities, they said, "We are committed to learning from this tragedy, and a child safeguarding practice review has been carried out." That hasn't been released yet. I'll be interested to read it when it does get released. I imagine there will be something about lessons being learned, because that's the usual BS that comes out in these kind of reports, because lessons just clearly aren't getting learned, because we're talking about child death, it seems, more and more frequently, particular child death at the hands of those who are meant to care for them more than anybody else in this world. For those of you who are interested, I will amend in the description below when I find out the length of her sentence. I wanted to cover this now because it's in the press and I just needed to know about it because I followed the case throughout. And I hope that she gets a massive minimum sentence. I hope they go really hard on her. And I also hope that she has to serve it consecutively with the child cruelty as opposed to concurrently. Why lump these sentences in? Why not actually punish people appropriately for the kind of torture and brutality that they show their victims? In this case, that little boy absolutely deserves justice. And I don't believe that a short sentence will in any way, shape or form genuinely create the impact that it should, when you consider that Christina Robinson has lied from the get-go, has failed to take accountability and responsibility for any of her actions, has said that she's not guilty, basically asked to be considered not guilty, even though we clearly can see the horror that she inflicted on this child. This is not a woman who has learned. This is not a woman who believes that she's done anything wrong. And that means that you cannot make this person change unless they can see the error of their ways. And I think the only person we should be considering in this situation is this gorgeous child who's been denied life. And let's be real, that's what we're talking about. The torture, brutality, and hideous death of this little boy. And somehow she may well get to walk our streets again. The only person that matters here is Duanalea. And this video is 100% dedicated to him. I think the picture of this little boy's angelic face, it speaks volumes. How could such an angel end up in the hands of such a devil. Take care, guys. RIP, little boy. Wherever you are now, I have no doubt whatsoever, you are absolutely surrounded in bliss. And you'll be in a very different afterlife to that of this excuse for a mother that you were so cruelly placed with. Take care, guys. Let me know your thoughts in the comments below as ever. Be safe.